Welcome to page 49. We're here to talk about Mary as the woman in chapter 12 of Revelation. And I will warn you as we get into this that this chapter, at least for me, is like one of the more mind-bending chapters of scripture because it's got that really strong Catholic yes and principle. Okay, if you know what I mean. It's yes, it's one thing, and it's another thing. So there's arguments or disagreements, as usual, welcome to the New Testament, about how to interpret this chapter. But by and large, the church really advocates that this is Mary, and I'll show you why, but also, or rather, yes, and it's Mary and it's Israel slash the church. Okay, so it's this kind of confusing, imperfect analogy where you're like, oh, I wish it was clean and neat and perfectly just about Mary, but it's not. It's about multiple things at once. Remember, we are still in the book of Revelation. We are in visual prophecy. Things aren't perfect. I don't know. I like to be comforted by the fact that the leopard, this is so random, but we've been talking about the beast, in the book of Revelation, and the beast is the fourth beast from Daniel, and how the leopard in Daniel has both four heads and four wings. And if it's just trying to symbolize the four generals of Alexander the Great, why does it need four heads and four wings? That feels like now we're talking about eight something or other. You know what I'm saying? So the visual prophecy is funky. We're not familiar with it, we're not always comfortable with it, but that doesn't mean that there's richness to dive into. So I just kind of want to hold your hand as I'm bringing you through chapter 12 to show you that if you get a little bit discouraged that things are not neat and tidy, just welcome to visual prophecy. That's just kind of how it works. And one day in heaven, hopefully we'll get a lot more clarity. Again, as I've advocated, I think since the beginning of this course, if this is something you want to kind of go down your own rabbit hole and learn more about, be my guest. I invite you, especially Ascension has this great article from Dr. Andrew Swofford about Mary and being the woman in chapter 12 of Revelation that was really helpful for me. So anyways, let's dive in. I'm going to read a bit here from Revelation for you. It's a short chapter, and the main parts with the woman are chapter 12, verses 1 through 6. So again, very short. I'll just read the whole thing, and then we'll kind of get into it. And a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. She was with child, and she cried out in pangs of birth, in anguish for delivery. And another sign appeared in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon with seven heads and ten horns and seven diadems upon his heads. His tail swept down a third of the stars from the sky and cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to bear child, that he might devour her child when she brought it forth. She brought forth a male child, one who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. But her child was caught up to God and to his throne, and the woman fled into the wilderness, where she was in a place prepared by God, in which she was nourished for 1,260 days. Okay, essentially, the next thing that happens is that Michael, the archangel, defeats the dragon. And skipping to verse 13, when the dragon saw that he had been thrown down to earth, he pursued the woman who had borne the male child. But the woman was given two wings of the great eagle, that she might fly from the serpent into the wilderness, to the place where she was to be nourished for a time, and times, and half a time. The serpent poured water like a river out of his mouth after the woman to sweep her away with the flood. But the earth came to the help of the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed the river which the dragon had poured forth from its mouth. Then the dragon was angry with the woman, and he went off to make war with the rest of her offspring, on those who keep the commandments of God and bear the testimony to Jesus. And he stood on the sand of the sea. And then, moving into chapter 13, he raises the beast of the sea out of the sea. Okay, so we've got a dragon, we've got a woman, we've already established, I believe, in the other pages that the dragon is the devil himself. Okay, so obviously we got this scene of the dragon waiting to devour the woman's child, but in the end they both get away. Let's take this by five main plot points, okay? Just to plot out the points of what we're actually reading here. Point number one, the woman is introduced and described by her clothing and by her labor. So we meet the woman, her clothes, her labor. Point number two, we meet the big red dragon. He tries to eat the child, but they both escape. Number three, the woman flees into the wilderness. Number four, Michael the Archangel defeats the dragon. Number five, the dragon tries to attack the woman again, and since he cannot, he attacks her children by raising up the beast of the sea. Okay, so this is like a sad chapter for the devil, but it's a happy chapter for us because he's trying to defeat everybody and she's protected by God. She's protected by Michael the Archangel, which is a cool thought, by the way, that Mary, this human woman, is protected by the Archangel. Anyway, so that's the main plot, but now let's look at how this connects to Mary, and then we'll look at how it connects to Israel because it's yes about Mary and about Israel slash the church. Okay, so first connection to Mary is how she's dressed. Like I said, we're introduced to her by her clothes. A great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, on their head, a crown of 12 stars. Okay, all of this means something. All of this matters. The fact that she's got 12 stars indicates that it's 12 tribes of Israel. The fact that she's got a crown on her head indicates that she's a queen. So she's the queen of Israel. We know from the Old Testament that the queen mother of Israel is the mother of the king. So it makes sense that the child she's bearing is the king of Israel. Okay? So she's giving birth to the king of Israel. She is the queen of Israel. Okay? She's dressed like the queen mother. She's also dressed, point number two, like the apparition Our Lady of Guadalupe. Our Lady of Guadalupe appears standing on the moon. She's eclipsing the sun. She's wearing this garment of stars. She's pregnant. So there's so many comparisons. Our Lady of Guadalupe didn't appear in biblical times. She appeared much later, right, to Juan Diego when the Aztec Indians were still around. But she appears in this outfit that really matches the woman of Revelation 12. That can't be an accident, right? So we see an image of Mary, the Queen Mother, that fits Mary. An image of Mary, Our Lady of Guadalupe, that fits Mary. Now let's backtrack a tiny bit out of chapter 12 into chapter 11. Reminder, there were no chapter breaks back when this originally was written. The chapter breaks were inserted later. So sometimes that really serves us well, and sometimes that really trips us up because we think, oh, that was a different chapter, that doesn't matter. Not so. So look at the very last verse before we meet the woman, and it describes the Ark of the Covenant. Okay? Chapter 11, verse 19, then God's temple in heaven was opened, and the ark of his covenant was seen within his temple. Dot dot dot. And there's the woman. Okay, I'm not just trying to make this happen and showing you, oh, this is definitely it. This is like taught by church fathers and scholars that look, the ark of the covenant comes down, and what does John describe? He doesn't say it was a gold box. He says there was a woman. Okay, so the understanding is that Mary, who already is the new Ark of the Covenant. We have established that. We will establish that in later pages of this course. If we haven't established that well enough already, it's through Mary's visitation. It's the fact that she was overshadowed, all these different things. But she's the Ark of the Covenant. And then in heaven, John sees her as the Ark of the Covenant. Okay? So this is how it relates to Mary. And then number four, the children of the world that the devil goes after are the children of the church. Do you notice that? The dragon was angry with the woman, this is verse 17, and went off to make war with the rest of her offspring. So if it's Mary, Mary only had one child, right? Nope. Mary only had one child biologically, but on the cross, when Jesus gave Mary to John, he gave her as mother to the world. We call her the queen and the mother of all the world, of all Christians. We all claim her as Mother Mary. And so he goes off to make war with the young church. It says, those who keep the commandments of God and bear the testimony to Jesus. He goes to make war with Christians, and Christians are her children. She's the mother of all Christians. So that also relates to Mary. Okay, making sense? So there's a strong argument here. Oh my gosh, this woman is Mary. Now, in a minute, we're going to talk about the birth, because the birth makes us think nativity, but there's another birth going on. But first, before we do that, let's also see on the flip side of the coin how this woman also is representing Israel. Because it's not just that she's only Mary, there's also these Israelite parts of her, if you notice. Number one, of how Mary can, sorry, the woman connects to Israel is that she runs away into the wilderness to be nourished. Okay, do you see this in verse 6? The woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared by God in which to be nourished. Think about what happened when the Israelite people fled into the desert away from slavery to Egypt. They were nourished by manna. Okay, it's just a connection that's hard to ignore. It's really, really clear. Same thing down in verse 13. Or 14, the woman was given two wings of the great eagle that she might fly from the serpent into the wilderness. Two wings of the great eagle is actually a reference, that same line on eagle's wings is a reference in Exodus to the fact that they fled speedily out of Egypt. So it's a reference to Israel fleeing in God's safety to the wilderness. So we definitely see Israel, and Israel is kind of a type of the church. Mary is a type of the church as well. So we could just kind of sum those both up and say, Mary, you know, sorry, the woman is the church. But let's go a little deeper here. If your head is still screwed on, we're going to talk about how this event of chapter 12, the birth, relates not only to the nativity birth, but also to the cross. Okay, so let's, you know, draw a line on your paper. We're done talking about how this relates to Mary versus Israel. Now we're talking about what this event describes. Okay, so first is the birth, and second is going to be the crucifixion. First, birth. At first glance, you know, Mary's pregnant. She's going to give birth. She gives birth. What do we think? We think the nativity. We think Christmas. Okay. But there's more, because there's another birth happening. Okay. On the very first day that you start a new job, let's just get our head out of the Bible for a second and just kind of establish a way of speaking. I could say, I am, you know, giving birth to this new era in which I am an accountant because I'm starting a new job. Birth is widely used as a metaphor for new beginnings. I've got an idea. I have to give birth to this idea, right? I know it's not that common, but just follow me here, because this is what Revelation 12 is about to do. It is describing not only the birth of a child physically, but also the birth of a king on his enthronement day. When does a child become a king? Not when that child's born, even if he's destined to be a king, but on the day that he's actually enthroned a king. Yeah? So Revelation 12:5 says she brought forth a male child, one who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. The rod of iron part is a direct reference to Psalm 2:9. Psalm 2:9 describes the enthronement feast of the Davidic king. He's birthed into his kingship. He's born as king. He sits down on the throne. He's enthroned. He's got his throne on, his, you know, his crown on. He's in majesty, okay? The rod of iron. So in other words, this is not just a moment of her birthing an infant. This is the moment of the Davidic king ascending the throne and being born a king, okay? This is the first day of his life as a baby, but it's the first day of his enthronement with her as queen mother. Now, why do I make this point? Why is this significant? Because we're about to look at how this event is also the crucifixion. And the crucifixion is the day that Jesus ascends his throne and his marriage bed. Okay, the cross is the throne, the cross is the marriage bed. But the crucifixion is not the nativity. It's not the same thing. Okay, so we have to show that the nativity of Jesus being born as an infant is described here, but so is the nativity of his kingship, okay? Because the nativity of his kingship is paralleled here through the crucifixion. You with me? All right, we're going to keep moving then. So first, at first glance, yes, this is about birth, physical birth, and the birth of a king. Second, this is about the crucifixion. The cross is where Jesus is enthroned. And he, by the way, births the church out of his own way, just like Adam out of his side, like Eve. But check this out. Dr. Swofford argues, with a school of thought behind him, he's not just out on a limb here himself, saying that John 19 and Revelation 12 are the same event. One describes it from heaven's point of view. One describes it from earth's point of view. John 19 is when Jesus gives his mother away to John. Let me say this again. There's this argument here I'm explaining to you that Revelation 12, this event of Mary giving birth to this child, is the heavenly view of when God gave his mother to the church on the cross. You might be like, whoa, 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 whoa. But remember, we're not thinking primarily about Christmas. We're thinking about the first day of the enthronement of a new king, which is on the cross. Okay, here we go. In both, I've got a couple points to show you how these two knit together. In both of these accounts, Revelation 12:1 and John 19:26, Mary is called woman. Or rather, the woman in Revelation is called woman. And Mary is called woman. Mary is only called woman on the cross and at the wedding feast of Cana, at the beginning and end of his public ministry. Okay? Woman is also the name of Eve. It's important that when Jesus calls Mary woman, he's signifying something. Okay? Second point, this woman is clearly the mother of the Messiah. This is Mary, the mother of Jesus, John 19:26. But this is also, she literally gives birth to the king of Israel. So Revelation 12:5, the whole rod of iron thing. So this woman is the mother of the Messiah. And this woman is the mother of all Christians. So we see that she's the mother of all Christians in Revelation because the devil goes to attack her other children who are Christians. And we see it on the cross because Jesus gives her to John, thus making her the mother of all Christians. So those are the three we've done so far. Woman, mother of the Messiah, mother of all Christians. there's a defeat of the devil in Revelation 12. The devil is defeated by Michael, but then also by, like, he chases after the woman and he can't get her. So she's defeated. He's defeated. The devil's defeated. And on the cross, Jesus is defeats the devil. We find this in John 12, 23, and 31, but it refers to the death of Jesus on the cross, okay? And last thing is birth pangs. She's crying out in labor pains, Revelation 12, 2. But in John 16, 21, he's referencing his death, talking about birth, okay? Like, the whole death and birth line is blurred here, because when Jesus dies, it brings forth new life. Obviously, that's not the same as natural birth. For women, we don't all have to die to give birth, thank goodness. Otherwise, we'd all have lots of widowers and one child running around. But anyways, you see what I'm saying here? I know that it's not, like, in our neat, clear-cut, literary way, it's not exactly the same. But there's a strong comparison here where both scenes have a woman, the mother of the Messiah, the mother of Christians, the defeat of the devil, and birth pangs. And the idea is that Jesus, on the cross, is the new king. He is born into his new kingship, and he destroys the devil through his ascension to the cross, through his laying down of his life for his bride. And the devil's defeated, and he is defeated by the king, he's defeated by the woman, he's defeated by St. Michael the Archangel, and then he can't even get to the Christians. And at the crucifixion, it looks like Jesus has lost, but he has won. He has defeated death there. Okay? All right? One last thing let me throw at you today. We're going to call this category mysteries. Okay? I don't know about you, but my mind, when I read this, sticks on things that I don't understand. So, like, look at verse 6. The woman runs off to the wilderness in which to be nourished for 1,260 days. You're like, what? 1,260 days? What does that mean? First of all, play around with it. It's 3.5 years. Okay? And it's 42 months. And she's also described a little bit later as being nourished for a time and times and half a time in verse 14. So you're like, okay, what? How long is this woman being nourished? How does this relate to Mary? What? I have to admit, I don't have the answer for you, but I do have something that normalizes it. This is a quote of Daniel. This is not John making up this number. These numbers, time and time and half a time, and the period of time of 1,260 days, those are both appearing in Daniel 7:25. So it symbolizes an intense period of tribulation, persecution, testing for God's people, but it's not unique to Revelation. So the fact that it ties over to Daniel, you're like, okay, John's trying to do something. So I don't know if you want to go down a rabbit hole and figure out what it is. There's all sorts of, be warned, all sorts of Protestant and non-Catholic interpretations that point this to, like, how long the papacy is going to last and, you know, the fall of a certain saint or whatever. Like, lots of Revelation studies. I would really recommend you only read Catholic ones, because they're all misunderstanding the book of Revelation, because what you need at the heart of Revelation is Mary and the Mass. And if you don't have those, you don't have the correct understanding. Okay, we will talk more specifically about the Catholic meaning of Revelation and the lens through which to look at it on the next page. See ya there.